Hello, and welcome to the Fuel Run Recover podcast, helping everyday runners fuel better, run smarter, and recover faster so you can reach your full performance potential. I'm your host, Stephanie Natchek, dietitian, fitness coach, and a fellow runner too. As the owner of Stephanie Natchek Performance Nutrition, I've spent the last 10 years helping runners learn to fuel their bodies, level up their running performance, and establish healthier relationships with food and exercise. If you're ready to reconnect with your love of running, then let's get started on today's episode. All right. So before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to invite you to check out a few great free resources that I created just for runners. To get them, all you have to do is click on the link in the show notes or visit www.stephanienatchek.com. If you visit my website, there's a little pop-up box that comes up and it'll prompt you to enter your email address, and these guides will be sent right to your inbox. The first guide is my fueling guide for runners. So in this resource, you'll find my top fueling tips for runners, as well as some specific meal ideas for both your pre- and post-run fuel. If you've been struggling to understand what to eat when to support your running and just figuring out like what those meal ideas, like what those meals look like, what kind of foods you should be including before versus after you run, what the difference is between pre- and post-run fueling, then this guide is exactly what you need to get you started on the right path. The other guide that I created is my strength training guide for runners. So this guide includes both a PDF resource, has some tips, guidelines, and links to my YouTube series where I actually walk you through all of the exercises in the program. This is a great beginner strength training guide for runners who want an effective but efficient full body workout that helps support the key muscles and movements you need to run stronger and injury-free. So once again, both of these guides are available together. I have them put together as a little bundle for you. You can just click on the link in the show notes or go over to www.stephanienatchek.com, enter your email address just the one time, and both of these free guides will get sent to your inbox right away. I hope you enjoy these resources and find them helpful in supporting you and your running. And now let's get into today's episode. Okay, so thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode of the Fuel Run Recover podcast. I am so excited today to be joined by Rebecca McConville, who is a fellow registered dietitian. And of course, she's going to tell you all about herself and her education and the work that she does shortly. But we are here today to talk about something that I think really should be top of mind for every endurance runner, whether you see yourself as a runner or you don't, or, you know, depending on no matter how much you run, the volume of training you do, whether you do marathons or you don't or whatever, this is something that I want every runner to be knowledgeable about and aware of and to be thinking about when it comes to their nutrition and their fueling strategy. And that is low energy availability and something called relative energy deficiency in sport. So that is what we are here to chat about with Rebecca today, is all about REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport, and LEA, or low energy availability. So thank you so much for agreeing to join me here, Rebecca. And we'll start off by hearing more about yourself, your education, the work and research that you do, and just a little bit about you as a whole.
Thank you for having me on. Boy, where to start? I'm like many dietitians. That's the road less travel. I kind of hopped around in between different areas. I had a lot of unlearning to do, like a lot of dietitians too. I went into clinical practice, was part of a weight management clinic, and then realized like, oh, what I'm doing, boy, they hate coming to see me, and it just doesn't seem like it works in the long run. And funny story, we were getting ready to create like a bariatric surgery program. And I was like, well, I think that we should have a psychologist as a part of the team. And so the psychologist that was there introduced me to the co-founders of Insight Counseling, which was an eating disorder clinic. They came and presented, and just listening to them, I mean, my heart sunk. I was like, this is what I'm doing wrong. This is my unlearning, and what they're saying just felt right. So that kind of started, I'm kind of jumping in the middle. That led me into the work that I do now around eating disorders, but the work around REDS and low energy availability was influenced by my own live experience as a college athlete, where like most of us, we're trying to find the competitive edge. So I was like, boy, what if I started watching what I'm eating and putting in a little bit of extra training? I'll get quicker, I'll get faster, because at that level, everybody's kind of on the equal playing field. And then before long, kind of took it too far, but didn't realize it because so many puzzle pieces were out floating that nobody put together. And so I was seeing provider for anemia and irritable bowel, and had had a rib fracture that wasn't healing correctly.
A
And so
rib
that's really,
fracture.
yeah, I played basketball, so I came
Oh.
down off a jump shot and landed on my side. And
Oh, wow.
wouldn't advise that. Part of it
That
probably
feels like a
was
hard
that
bone
my
to break.
yes. Part of it was probably because I was getting low in energy, and so I really wasn't protecting my body in the way that I normally. I was a very scrappy player, and I always joked, I should have seen some of the warning signs where, yeah, I was the top of the pack, and our, I don't know, our coach had us do like a 2 mile run, which was kind of funny for basketball players, but yet I couldn't hold my own on the court anymore. So it's like I was getting better at parts of the play that really didn't improve my performance, but when it came to my strength and my agility, those declined. So I've always had this background interest of like, okay, I thought I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing correctly as an athlete. What caused me to cross that line? And so even at that point, nobody even brought up female athlete triad. None of my providers, not to their fault, suspected anything. So as I got into my work as a dietitian and focused more around food and started my own, I took a sports nutrition class for my graduate degree. I got more and more into the research, which was funny because when I took seminar, I hated reading research and studying it, and now I can't get enough. So if people follow me, I do Science Sunday on Instagram and kind of talk about the practicality with that. And like I said, I hit that fork in the road where I didn't like how I felt when I was practicing in that weight focused model. And I knew that my heart was really in trying to find how helping athletes perform, but not feeling like they had to be so restrictive and so hard on themselves. And so the co-founder said, boy, I could see you specializing in athletes with eating disorders. And I kind of laughed at her. I was like, well, but I got to pay my bills. I don't think I'll have enough work to do that. And then the rest is history. And so I, from there, just jumped into my practice being centered around, Reds wasn't really defined until 2015, and I had already started my private practice at that point. And then that integration of athletes with eating disorders. So I told you that was going to be a long-winded answer to tell you how I got to where I'm at today.
I'll never forget the first person that I ever told that they weren't eating enough, and part of their like struggle with so many different symptoms they were having was that they actually needed to be eating more. And I will never forget the look that this woman gave me. Like I was absolutely off my rocker, the look on her face. And I think now, what's such a wonderful thing, I think, just the sort of awareness amongst athletes that a lot of people are coming to me, and you might experience the same thing, where a lot of people are now coming to work with me because they suspect that they are under fueling. They suspect that they're not eating enough to support their training. They're thinking maybe the issues that I'm having are a lack of energy or something with my nutrition. Whereas I don't think that that was the case when I got started. Like, suggesting to people that maybe part of their problem was that they weren't eating enough to support their training demands. I mean, that was just sort of ludicrous to a lot of people that could be the case a number of years ago. But I think that's shifting now. I don't know if you have had the same experience.
Absolutely. And I think that's the good and bad with social media. I think the more that people are actually talking about what they've experienced, and we are seeing people move away from a diet mentality, I think we still got a lot of work to do. So the great thing is that we have the awareness. Now we need more application of how to use that when somebody comes in and we suspect it, and also being able to prevent it as well. But yeah, it is kind of, I mean, I wrote my book over 5 years ago and nobody had really even heard of it. And so it's nice. It still always makes my day when somebody's like, I just got your book. And the fact that they're still looking for information around that just shows that growth and change is possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to hear all about the book and where people can connect with you and find you, but we're going to save all of that for the end.
Sure.
So you can tell us more where everyone can read about what you've put out there and find you on social media as well. But I mean, we've kind of talked about some terminology here so far about REDS and low energy availability, and we've kind of talked about some concepts that people who are listening might not be familiar with. So let's break it down a little bit into, kind of a simple definition of what is REDS. How would you define REDS?
So the way I love to teach this is to kind of take some emotional charge. Like you talked about that woman when you said underfueled, and she just gave you that really strong expression because there's so much emotional language when we talk about bodies and weights and fueling and calories. So I use it in terms of money. We need to match our deposits coming in for the withdrawals that are happening. And I think a lot of times people dismiss, just sitting in a chair listening to a podcast requires energy. Our brain needs about 25% of that. Then we go on to just even cleaning your house or cooking dinner or going to school. Last but not least is the expenditure we do at the activity. The brain is kind of funny in the fact that it actually will prioritize that above some of our daily needs because it views it as the biggest stress. It doesn't understand if you're doing repeat 400s or out chasing a bear. It knows that that's what it needs to prioritize. So low energy availability gets to be that state where now the body is having to use the savings account as its primary means to get the energy bills paid. So when there's a mismatch of the deposits coming in to the withdrawals going out, it's like, okay, hey, we've got three savings accounts. We've got our liver that tends to fuel the brain. We have our body fat, and a lot of times people are like, that's fine, it can run that savings account down to zero. But what they forget is it's actually a very important regulator of our hormone health and health in general. And so we don't want to deplete that one. And then last but not least, that most athletes will agree on is our muscle. They don't want to be using their muscle for day-to-day energy needs. Once it gets to that point, I always joke like you wouldn't want to constantly be having your cell phone at 25% and having to plug it in, but that's what a lot of people do. And so you hit this window of metabolic suppression where if the body's like, all right, we've used the liver savings account. Now, body fat will only let you go so low because it has to survive. If you start crossing into having to use body fat, then at this point, reproduction is going to be slowed or halted. Our thyroid health is going to start to diminish as well. And then that's when people start to feel it physically and they come into you and they're like, I think I might be underfueled or something's wrong. My digestion's all a whack. And that's because they're running on those savings accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell us a little bit more about your research, the research that you've been involved in when it comes to REDS and low energy availability.
So I've not conducted any research directly. I've helped participate on a lot of advisory boards. Right now I'm helping out with the IOC or USPOC on what's the proper screening tactics? What are things that they want to have for those athletes they suspect as REDS? We have participated on a pre and postpartum app during COVID that was supposed to be through Nike. And then, unfortunately, due to COVID, they didn't have enough funding to get that up and going. But that was kind of cool to be able to talk about the intersection of REDS in that stage. So, not been on research directly. I've participated in a lot of like body composition data, like how that might influence red status and being able to help clinicians use certain tools and toolkits.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how has our understanding of energy availability, something you mentioned in your introduction was the female athlete triad, which is, again, a term that a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with. How has our understanding of energy availability evolved over the years and how it kind of impacts overall health and performance in these different areas?
So the female athlete triad was the triad of bone stress injuries, two or more stress fractures, amenorrhea, which is the loss of three consecutive cycles or less than six in a year, and then a significant weight change. Well, 50% of our female athletes actually tend to be on birth control, so that's kind of a hard variable there. And then we realize if we get to the point that they've had two stress fractures, we probably have compromised bone density. So we might need to look at some more proactive means, and that this didn't include the males at that time. I know they do have a male athlete triad, so they've expanded it. So if you picture the triangle, now we go and have the whole rest of the organ systems in the body, because we know a lot of digestive difficulties can stem from underfueling brain. So we start looking at the consensus statement on mental health that is linking depressive episodes due to underfueling need to be ruled out before a clinical depression assessment is conducted or diagnosis. And so it really encompasses the holistic part of our athletes and being able to see how underfueling and REDS might impact them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so interesting about the mental health perspective. Is that something that you've seen specifically in athletes? Like, are we talking specifically about depressive episodes in athletes? We want underfueling to be ruled out, or do you say that it's kind of applicable to like the broader population? That might just be speculation, but.
No, great question. Well, since that article speaks to athletes, that was directly to it's kind of the intersection of overtraining, REDS, and then clinical depression. But ironically, you brought that up. I have a colleague, Chris Johnson, and he has a saying, there's life load and there's training load, and the brain doesn't know the difference. He's a physical therapist and running coach. And so many times, you'll see the REDS development or an injury that develops during times of severe stress. And so you don't know the chicken or the egg conundrum, which started first. But our food is broken down eventually into neurotransmitters, and neurotransmitters are what makes our mood in the brain. So it would make logical sense. And I always say you've got to have fuel to feel. If you don't have enough fuel, then you're probably going to kind of feel flatlined on your feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And two, when we look at like nutrients in the diet and all of the different vitamins and minerals that do play such an important role in brain health and brain function, I mean, it's not even just about getting in enough calories, which of course is key, but also like the quality of those calories. Are we getting in all of those essential vitamins and minerals too, to support the health and function of the brain? So that's something that I have a lot of conversations with my clients about is we want to get you eating enough, but we also want you getting like all of these different things that help to make us a healthy person.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the newest components that they've looked at is so we have end of day energy balance, and then we also have within day energy balance. So are they going longer than 3 to 4 hours without taking in fueling that will promote stress on the body? But we also are looking at glucose availability. So there's so much fear around carbohydrates that even if somebody has adequate calorie intake, we still are seeing dysfunction in bone turnover and thyroid health when they're not consuming enough carbohydrates. So you're right, it's not just the calorie piece of it. It is the variety and ensuring that we have enough of these nutrients, which usually if we have a variety of different foods that we're eating, you usually will get those covered. But again, that's exciting that each day we're getting more and more new literature and research.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anybody who's listening, to this concept of in-day calorie balance, when we talk about the importance of like meal timing and having those regular meals and snacks throughout the day, this is what we're alluding to. It's not having no calories all day long and then having just like one gigantic meal at the end of the day. And yeah, sure, on paper, you might be in a pretty good energy balance. It's how do we distribute that energy throughout the day so that we're getting in the nutrients that our body needs all day long to support all of these different functions. Because your brain doesn't know that you're going to eat in 6 or 8 hours, right? It only knows what it has available to it right now at this moment in time.
Exactly.
So we've talked about a couple different things here. We've talked about REDS, and then we've talked about low energy availability. For people who are listening and might be thinking, like, are like, we're using these terms, are they the same or the different? What is the difference? How would you sort of describe the difference between REDS and low energy availability?
It's a good question that I don't think probably has been clarified as much, but low energy availability is the state in which we will start to see dysfunction start. So REDS is kind of the cluster of symptoms that pop up for that athlete. So you wouldn't see REDS show up if they're in a energy available window. So reds is kind of those symptoms that appear for that athlete, and they can be different from time to time too. That's where, again, typically the brain will say reproduction and bone development are unnecessary, and they're the first two that we start to see those signs. But that's not always the case. Sometimes it could be we see soft tissue injuries that continue to pop up, or we see digestion. I keep going back to that one. That's a huge one.
That's
Or blood work.
so common, so common.
Yes. Especially for dietitians. I'm like, if you're getting an athlete in and they've got some irritable bowel, or they're thinking that they have food intolerance, immediately you need to be thinking reds.
So the reason that we got on to do this podcast episode together, the reason that I invited you to come and speak to myself and my audience today is because close to the end of 2023, right at the end of the year, there was a consensus statement on REDS that was put out by the International Olympic Committee. And, this is something that we haven't had an update. When was the last IOC consensus statement? What year did that one come out before this one?
So 2015 was when they
Okay.
first came out with that terminology. So this might be the first broad spectrum, because it also had lots of supplemental articles that came with it. But I do know there was kind of like a up and coming what to expect in between there. I think 2020, COVID put a delay. That's why we're just now kind of seeing that consensus statement.
Yeah. So it was really, exciting as a dietitian who works with endurance athletes and who really spends so much time in this space to have this consistent available. And so I wanted to, talk about some of the highlights, some of the key takeaways from this consensus statement that runners should know about. So I would love to hear your thoughts, Rebecca, on what are kind of the big things that came out of this paper that people should be aware of.
It's almost like each consensus statement things broaden to include more and more diagnostic criteria, which I appreciate. So we started looking at even more of the blood work that could pop up. Pelvic floor was introduced in there as well, that urinary incontinence could be a part of REDS. They started talking about postpartum athletes, masters athletes, more information on male. So it's almost like each layer they're getting more depth of knowledge, so therefore we're having more criteria to go upon. The one part that I kind of sit in the middle is they have the REDS CAT tool that gives a scoring, and I think a lot of times people kind of want to know their level of severity, and I think that's great, especially in like governing bodies or universities, where they can say like, should this athlete need to have medical intervention? Do they need to be pulled from sport or reduced? But in outpatient setting, the one thing I don't want our athletes to do, and I know you'll feel this way, is I don't want them to feel they're not sick enough with REDS to get treatment or to optimize their fueling. And luckily, I don't think they're going to go in and assess their own CAT score. But I could see that being, I don't want to say misused, but kind of misinterpreted, as they're not being severe enough.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So for people to go in to do the self-assessment, give themselves a score, and maybe use that as a determining factor in whether or not they decide to take action, if they feel like, oh yeah, it's not really that much of a problem. I don't need, I haven't, maybe I haven't lost my menstrual cycle yet, so it's not that bad. I can continue on this road, or I haven't had a bunch of stress fractures yet, so I can continue on this road.
Yeah, always say yet, and then once that starts, it unfortunately it's like a domino cascade. And I really wish that we could get our athletes and runners to view, just like if you're getting a training plan and a running coach that's going to be with you to progress as you're going along in your plan. Wouldn't that be nice to start off with a dietitian then? So that way you can plan to match your nutrition with that, because a lot of times we have the unintentional underfueling, like the woman that you spoke to that was just like, oh, really? I wouldn't have thought I was underfueling. How much do I need? And so the more proactive we can be and educate them, because there isn't accurate information on Google, the better off. And I would love to see that take off as we now develop more awareness around REDS.
Well, and just like you said, you know, as that kind of old school female athlete triad is, you know, needing to have two or more stress fractures in order to be diagnosed with this issue. Like that's a pretty end game. Like that's far down the road of underfueling is reaching the point where you're having stress fractures, right? Like you've lost all of that bone mineral density. You've obviously been underfueling for some time, not getting in proper recovery to reach that point. We don't want to be pushing the envelope and not taking action on our maybe lack of fueling strategy until we start to run into issues. Because, as I'm sure you have found, and I know I have found the clients that I work with, is people who have many, many years under their belt of underfueling, it can start to become really challenging and take a very long time to see some of these symptoms resolve, especially when it comes to the loss of the menstrual cycle. I have a lot of athletes wanting to know, like, how long till I get my period back? When am I going to get my period back? Like, what's the time frame looking like? And it's not a quick thing, especially if we've gone a long time not having regular cycles. Like for some athletes, it could be years.
Oh, I love this. And that's one of the ways I have been able to connect people, not using scare tactics, but think about most of the time a bone stress injury, depending on where it's at in the grade, you're looking at 12 to 16 weeks out. So to get those two stress fractures, that might be 24 to 32 weeks that you haven't been able to do anything. What also means you've got what, 8 to 12 weeks of return to run program. So that means you've now been pulled from your sport that you love or running that you love for a couple of years. And so if we can stay ahead of that, and also realizing, like you said, when I teach, especially to clinicians, I teach that reds has a calendar year. So you've got the correction of the reds, but our hormones in our body stays kind of volatile trying to protect itself. And so you still have to really ensure you're in an energy available window for up to a year from the time that you correct that energy deficit.
Which, and you know, for a lot of people, you know, if we're talking about people in endurance sport, correcting that energy imbalance, correcting that energy deficiency sometimes is harder than we think it's going to be when we're still doing quite high volumes of training. And I know over the years, the understanding of how much do we need to reduce our movement, how much we need to reduce our training while simultaneously increasing those calories to make it, you know, to correct that deficiency. And that sometimes is the hardest part for people to do. They're like, okay, fine, I'll eat more. If you know, that's okay, I can do
Let
that.
me run.
But like, how much do I need to cut back on my running? And of course, we're always really hesitant to tell someone that they can't train or they have to completely stop all of the volume that they're doing. But when we're still trying to maintain a really high volume, you can just imagine how much fuel you need to both correct reds and then also fuel for those new training demands.
Yeah, so that's where I like to use. I'm a big visual person. And so going back to that bank analogy, you know, you've got some interest that's accumulated when you've been using those savings accounts. So there's that acute part of it where sometimes we're really almost guessing how many calories are needed to start getting into an energy balance state. Then we start going from there. And so if they can match their nutrition to their activity, we can keep that activity there. But a lot of times they're like, oh man, I'm trying to consume X amount of calories and I'm so tired and I can't chew. So then we talk about, okay, can we reduce the intensity or the volume for 2 to 4 weeks and kind of see if we can get some momentum going there? And I kind of draw like horses racing here. We got Kentucky Derby going, right? Like, how can we get to that finish line fastest if it means for you to pull back on your activity and continue to increase your intake? That's going to get you there faster than trying to like inch along to get there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, for maybe for you, but working in the eating disorder space, but for, certainly for me, working with my recreational athletes, is everyone's number one fear when they pull back from their training volume is weight gain, right? How am I, like, I can't reduce my volume. I don't want to reduce my volume because if I do, I'm so afraid that I'm going to see weight gain, especially when we're stuck in this low energy availability cycle where people are reducing their calories and they're in that low energy availability state because they've been pursuing weight loss, and it's so hard to overcome that. So what's been your experience with that specific issue, and do you see it a lot, and how do you help people overcome that?
Yeah, absolutely. And first off, I always start with providing empathy. Like, I get it. I'm sorry we are in a culture that has so much emphasis on, and it puts this amount of fear. And then I try to dig a little bit deeper. Like, what does that mean for you? What are you fearful will happen if you were to gain weight? And a lot of times it'll be, I'll get slower, or it'll be harder on my body. And then I go back to what we're talking about with like the bone stress injuries. I'm like, well, I don't know if it's going to make you slower or if it's going to be harder on your body, but I do know these consequences that come from REDS will really decrease your fitness and be harder on your body. So let's focus on what the body can do for you. And I also go through, again, if there's signs that that metabolism has been suppressed, that by fueling, they may feel better. They may have better energy, so they may be more active during the day. They might actually be able to have better quality workouts because they've got the stamina. I hear that so much from especially a lot of my adolescent athletes, like, wow, I wasn't my like my rest in between, I was ready to go on my next set. Like, I was tired, but it wasn't like, I could barely hold my head up. And so trying to steer them into thinking about the empowerment of what their body is doing, and then saying, like, let's put that weight discussion on the back burner. I'm not dismissing that conversation, but let's just wait and see what the body can do for you. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, really looking at, people, like you said, we definitely don't want to be losing lean mass. We don't want to be losing muscle as a result of underfueling and being in that low energy availability state. So if we're going to be doing the training anyway, we may as well be fueling properly so that we can have those better quality workouts, actually work towards increasing and improving our strength and our muscle mass. So I also really like to, talk about the body composition angle as opposed to it just being about that weight. But I mean, both of us here, for anybody listening, we're in complete agreement that it's not the weight conversation is something that we definitely understand, and there is that fear. But please don't let that stop you from still pursuing an optimal fueling strategy for the sport that you're doing, for whatever amount or distance of running or type of running you happen to do.
Trying to use a wide variety of different stories from athletes. I mean, a lot of times we get so much attention on the key runners that they think have like the runner's body. But I have a high caliber trail runner endurance athlete that I work with. And he was even when we were wrapping up him returning to run, he was like, I think I actually need to run at a heavier weight. And to have a runner that like approached me about that, I was like, what?
Let
But
me write that down.
yeah, he goes out and breaks a course record on his very first run back. So I was like, oh my gosh, somebody that has a healthy mentality. Like, I realize for me, having my body be able to withstand the long haul is the most important thing, not chasing the short term, and then it continues to break down.
That's amazing. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah.
So we left off talking about the key takeaways from the consensus statement, and we kind of went on a little bit of a tangent here talking about all kinds of other things, which is great. But what are some other, key takeaways from that statement that runners should be aware of? Is there anything else that really kind of stood out to you as being important and impactful for athletes themselves?
It's a good question. I think, finding somebody who's REDS informed. I think we're getting better at that, but somebody who's going to understand, like myself, of course, this was only a few years ago. Just kidding. This was well over 20 years ago. That's going to look at the puzzle pieces and understand how they fit together. And I think now we're having more and more of that. But I think when they go, they need to make sure due diligence to ask some questions like, have you read the new REDS consensus statement? How do you integrate that into your practice? And again, being able to look at some of those different markers that are involved. And I also appreciated the one on mental health that was the first consensus statement that separated and talked about mental health and sport and how that can interweave with low energy availability.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started to answer this question with what you said about finding providers and talking to people who are REDS informed. But if a runner is listening to this and they're listening to, you had mentioned GI disturbances, obviously, reduction in performance, maybe seeing unwanted changes in body composition or weight or nutrient deficiencies. I mean, the list, I mean, when we talk about low energy availability and REDS, we're talking about something that impacts literally every system in the body. Like, there is no body mm-hmm. system that goes untouched by this condition. So there's something going on everywhere, and every corner of the body, there's something here. If a runner's listening to this and they're like, oh, hey, you know, this kind of maybe sounds like me, what should that runner do? What would be your advice for the runner who's listening to this episode?
So first, they can look for a sports RD that has a CSSD, so that's Certified Sports Specialist Dietitian, mainly because in that almost 30% of our board questions are centered around REDS and eating disorder, or, you know, get on and start searching or ask for word of mouth, and then ask some of those questions, like how do you work with somebody that has REDS? How do you help them correct that? If they can answer back those questions, then you know that they probably are comfortable with that population. If they look at you with kind of a puzzled look, that's probably somebody who's not necessarily informed themselves, and that's not going to be a good fit for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll also say that I'm in Canada, so we unfortunately do not have a CSSD in Canada.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right.
It's okay. But yeah, looking and asking those questions and making sure the provider's informed. And what I did not hear you say was get advice from the internet and follow a bunch of people on Instagram. Correct. And get. So I think the most important thing is, you know, just asking those questions of the provider, making sure that you're going to be working with someone who is knowledgeable and who, you know, is professional in this space, so that you know that you're getting the help that you need. If you're thinking about, you know, if maybe you're listening to this conversation and you're like, oh yeah, no, that's not for me, it's not really where I'm at right now or whatever, but maybe you are actively pursuing weight loss as a runner, I would still encourage you to be very, very cautious about who you embark on a nutrition relationship with when it comes to even that, because it's amazing how just a little bit of, you know, bad advice when it comes to nutrition for endurance runners can be a very slippery slope into REDS if the person that you're working with or getting information from just isn't well versed in the needs for performance nutrition for endurance athletes.
Okay, you brought up a great point. Two things from that is, I think a lot of times I'll hear people, well, but I'm not like a overly competitive runner or an elite runner. And so they, again, kind of dismiss. And that's where Nikki Key was like, she likes to actually remove the sport part of REDS and put active individuals. Because yeah. Some of the individuals that have come in to me with some of the severest REDS are the 40-year-old mom who likes to go out and run, but also does her boutique gym classes, and then
orange
is running
theory.
Kids.
Always, everyone always theory, goes to yeah. Orange Theory.
I wasn't going to throw a name, but since you did, I'll let you.
Orange, yeah. Orange Theory, you are great, and we have absolutely no issue with you, Orange Theory, but the people who love Orange Theory are always the ones with the worst
Yes. So because they're doing so much intensity, yes. And then there's a lot yes. of focus on the numbers and data. So they are even higher at risk, and they don't have all the team, like an athletic trainer or coach that sees them all the time. The other piece is, I'll get this too. Well, but I'm eating. It seems like I eat a lot. And yeah. Two other pieces that they pulled out of this is, it's 250 to 400 calorie deficit from what you need to take in versus what you're taking in over 5 days will start dysfunction. So it's not a significant amount, and you've got acute things that can happen, and then that adds up over time chronically as well.
So when, you know, kind of wrapping up our conversation here today, with any final thoughts or advice or things that runners should know about REDS and low energy availability?
I love challenging, what's the downside of being fed? I know our culture will give you downsides, but I challenge you to be curious and experiment with your own body and fueling. So many times I have individuals come back and they're like, this is great. I don't have to take a 2-hour nap after my long run. I can sit down and eat and then go and do my day. Or I don't feel like I'm obsessing or thinking about food because my brain has enough So I really want people just to play around and get curious and try to honor their body's needs to see what they can do from a performance standpoint.
Fantastic. And so just to kind of wrap up here, I know that a lot of people will be wondering where they can find out more information and connect with you. So where can people, connect with you online, share your social media, your website, anything like that that you might have with anyone listening here wants to learn more?
Yeah, so that's Rebecca ED Dietitian on Instagram. And then I also have my website, beccamccombell.com. So you can, there's resources for athlete providers. And then my book, Finding Your Sweet Spot, How to Avoid Reds, is on good old Amazon.
The information on this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used or relied upon for the diagnosis or treatment of any health condition. This information does not create a client-practitioner relationship and should not be used as a substitute for professional medical advice.